Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Professor Feldman said, defamation by tweet is an impeachable offense. And I think of the history of this country, and I think if defamation or libel or slander is an impeachable offense, I can't help but reflect about John Adams, about Thomas Jefferson, who routinely pilloried their political opponents.
Has the president committed an impeachable offense? No. The evidence and testimony has not revealed any impeachable offense. Second, do those offenses rise to the gravity that's worth putting the country through the drama of impeachment? Again, the answer is no.
This blanket categorical disregard of the legislative branch began with the president's refusal to cooperate with regular congressional oversight and has now extended to the House's constitutional duty on impeachment.
I'm very excited about bringing journalists into our meeting because Alec has nothing to hide. And this was a simple premise of the creation of an outreach component for the organization. Do you believe in the policies you're discussing? If yes, why not engage further?
So that means that the public is protected and has a protected right to both participate in these actions, to watch deliberations occur, and more importantly, to sort of scrutinize the kinds of interests that are impacting legislative action and legislators.
And with us to talk about this week's impeachment hearings, the Alec meeting in the Valley, and more are Lorna Romero, owner of Elevate Strategies, and Sam Richard, owner of the Ebenezer Group. Guys, welcome back and congratulations on your new positions there.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Lorna, let's start off with the impeachment, what we saw this week, just one day as opposed to several days in the past. We finally heard from some Arizona folks, including Andy Biggs and Debbie Lesko. Andy Biggs was out front in some ways of his criticism, even more than others. What did you make of where he's at, considering his leadership position among a conservative group now?
Yeah, I think Andy Biggs and the position that he took this week is consistent where he's been this entire time when it comes to impeachment. Obviously, he is not supportive of what's going on against the president, and he thinks this is a political, a political charade at this point. And so he made that very clear during his testimony and his questioning. But at this point, I think a lot of people are just wondering, like, what's even going on in D.C. anymore? And, we just went through Thanksgiving. We're entering Christmas time. I don't know how many people are actually paying attention to this outside of those of us in this room and the news media. I don't know how this is actually resonating with the typical voter. And what I'm most concerned about is an impeachment proceeding is a pretty big deal. I mean, this is a judicial proceeding. And now that it's become so politicized, in the future, if there is a situation where we need to impeach a president, are we going to be able to take it seriously moving forward? And I think that's a big issue that people need to grapple with.
Yes, Sam, the political aspect of it is bothering a lot of people from the standpoint especially that I suppose that we're supposed to expect members of Congress to be open-minded to some extent. Doesn't appear so far anyone is.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how long ago that expectation should have shifted, but I'm not sure how many, members of Congress are open-minded on any particular topic, especially something as divisive as impeachment. In fact, when Lorna was talking about the consistency of Congressman Biggs, he has been, right? Just as the Democrats have been as well. And I think that someone likened the entire impeachment saga as like a action movie, right? Like, James Bond gets into perilous situations, but he's going to make it to the end of the movie. And I think that for the most part, we all know how this movie ends. We're just kind of enjoying the drama as it goes on, which frankly is unfortunate because it's my belief that this was a serious and grave incident that should be taken seriously. But just the nature of politics and the nature of D.C., there's no room for that honest and open conversation.
I think we might need to get a definition from Sam on the word enjoyment if people are enjoying this drama.
Right, yeah. I was just going to say, I don't think everybody is enjoying
the
drama.
Fair enough.
I think they would like to see people in D.C. to be a little bit more productive. There are important things that have been put on hold because of everything that's happening right now.
Yes.
Well, so given the fact, Lorna, as you mentioned, that a lot of people are not necessarily paying attention to this, we heard in the opening montage, Representative Lesko saying that, this could create a lot of divisions in the country. We've heard people say that, an impeachment will rip the country apart. Would it have that dramatic an impact given the fact that, as you say, people aren't really necessarily paying a lot of attention right now?
The divisiveness is already there. I don't think the impeachment process has really changed that. As Sam said, people have been consistent in their support of the president, whether you're a Democrat or Republican, your opposition to him. So I don't think this necessarily changes it. I think this would have to get to an extreme level. I mean, this week you had constitutional attorneys talking about impeachment processes. I was mentioning to Sam earlier, I don't know how many average voters were paying attention to that testimony. So at this point, I don't think that this would be the cause of divisiveness. I think that's already been in the works. But people are going to they either support Trump or they don't. Bottom line, I don't think this is going to play a factor in that whatsoever.
Yeah. And I would just say to underscore that point, I know that the plural of anecdote is not data. But, you know, I had three gatherings of friends and family over the long Thanksgiving weekend, and impeachment maybe took up 2 to 3% of our topic. It wasn't a major topic around the dinner table or around the campfire or anything like that.
Now, do we think that's because people aren't paying attention, they have more important things to do, or because basically, Sam, as you said, the outcome has been predetermined?
I think it's more the latter, but I think that there is approaching, you know, despite the seriousness and graveness of what was committed, I think that there's this exhaustion mm-hmm. of talking about it. And, you know, Lorna mentioned it earlier, right? The House has sent nearly 300 pieces of legislation, most of them bipartisan, and they're just sitting on Mitch McConnell's desk for the Senate to do something. And I know that, you know, there's plenty of more stories where that came from, where there's real legislating and real policy. We still don't have the USMCA on the president's desk for signature. And some of those things, I think, are where average voters are getting exhausted on this charade.
It's just something new every day. You know, I feel like every time we're on this program talking to you, it's the question of, is this going to be the issue that takes down the president? Is this going to happen? And I think people just start tuning out. I mean, at some point, I feel like I'm going to tune out from this. I mean, it's just something new every single day. It's hard to keep up with. It's so in the weeds. And so at some point, like Sam said, it's not a topic of conversation anymore for most people. And we're still 11 months out away from the election. So yeah. Who knows what's going
to
happen?
Well, let me ask you one quick thing, though, when it comes to the extended period of time. So I talked with former Arizona Congressman Jim Colby this morning, who talked about how he thought the Nixon process made sense because it took 13 months and both parties, to some extent, came to some sort of an agreement. How much of it is just that because it is day after day, Lorna, because it is President Trump, it is social media, he's tweeting, that it feels so compressed, it's constant. But could people take another several months if that's what it took to actually do a real overall thing where people decided, okay, on the merits, I think this is good or bad?
Yeah, you raise a good point. I mean, this is a judicial proceeding. There's no reason to rush a judicial proceeding. I don't think any of us would want that if we were in that situation. And so you're right. I mean, in order for people to take this seriously and to actually do diligence in, you know, in the investigation, take your time. But you're right. We're in a 24-hour news cycle now. It's different than the Nixon administration. And so with social media and people constantly tweeting and everybody, whether they're an elected official or not, feeling like they need to pontificate about what's happening and who needs to break whatever news story first, I mean, it's just this intense environment that you didn't have when Nixon was going through this.
How does this impact other stuff going on in Washington? You both talked about issues that maybe aren't getting addressed. In this kind of climate, like, does this amp up the partisanship at all to the point where people from different parties aren't able to work on issues together, or has that ship kind of already sailed?
I would think that maybe some of that work is happening, but it's happening maybe in a less transparent way, or at least no one is focusing on it right now. I would imagine because, you know, we're talking a couple of weeks ago about the Intelligence Committee in the House and then now the Judiciary Committee in the House. There's a lot of members of Congress that aren't on either one of those panels, right? So I think that there's opportunities for big conversations over large pieces of legislation like prescription drug pricing or, you know, the trade agreements or other pieces that really need to move through Congress. It's happening. So I think once we get through whatever logjam we're in now, there might be an opportunity to move some of those larger pieces through.
I guess I'm cynical this morning. I think that ship has sailed. We've been talking about the USMCA for over a year now at this point. Democrats did not want to move it because they didn't want to give the president a win. So I think after this impeachment process, whatever the result is, it's going to be an even worse climate than it currently is. I just think at this point, you know, people are just focused on either removing the president or making sure he doesn't win in November, and that's unfortunate.
Is there any chance that the predetermined outcome that we all assume is predetermined is not what actually happens? Like, is there any chance greater than zero that a Republican votes for impeachment or a Democrat votes against impeachment, or the president isn't impeached, or if he is impeached, the Senate removes him?
I think bookmaking on Washington of late is a really folly. But I would say that the chances are definitely greater than zero, but I would pin them at far less than five.
Yeah, I could not see a scenario where a Republican votes for an impeachment. I think there might be some Democrats that vote against impeachment, mm-hmm. depending on, you know, what their races look like in November. But, I mean, for the most part, I mean, it's predetermined how people are going to come down on this.
Yeah. I guess for those of our listeners who actually did pay attention a couple of weeks ago, the person sitting next to Adam Schiff, Devin Nunes, actually made an appearance in the Valley this week to raise money for, I think, three Arizona Republican members of Congress. Lorna, let's talk about Devin Nunes a bit. Very controversial figure to the left, but I imagine fairly popular on the right. He's been a strong defender of President Trump. What does it say to you that he was in town?
I don't think any much of it. I mean, we always, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, people are coming through the state to help raise money all the time. And so obviously he resonates with a certain group of donors in the state. And so they capitalized on that to be able to help the Republican congressional leaders that needed some financial support. But this happens all the time. Ted Cruz comes into town. We've had a number of Democrats come into town. People are always here helping fundraise. That's pretty normal.
I was thinking the timing of it, though, just because everyone saw him on national TV being so defiant.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, I guess the timing it makes a lot of sense. I mean, this is probably the peak of Devin Nunes's being a celebrity status. I mean, 2 years ago, I probably wouldn't be having him come through the state of Arizona. But, I mean, that's the norm. I mean, we've seen that happen on the Democrats' side where there's a high-profile Democrat who's the flavor of whatever month, and they come in and raise some money. It's the same thing with Republicans. So, to me, I don't really think anything of it.
Yeah, and sometimes those opportunities provide a little bit of, a chance for some counter-programming, and I think that there were some folks who are closely paying attention to the impeachment process that found it very interesting that Devin Nunes was here. But, this is definitely a common thing. Members of Congress, governors from across the country will come through the state to help their party mates raise money.
I'm curious, especially with members of Congress, because I think for senators, even people who are casual political observers will recognize at least the name of a U.S. senator not from their state. But there are 435 members of Congress, and even with the hearings, I'm guessing a lot of people don't know who Devin Nunes is and don't know who, the Democratic members from other states who come through town are. Is this a really targeted, are we really targeting our candidates, targeting specific segments of either be it donors or of their constituents with these members of Congress from other places?
There's always a strategy involved when you have an elected official from another state coming in. If it's someone high profile, you have a public event, you have a rally, they do, the press rounds, you've had folks come in. If you want someone who's high profile and you're trying to get a message out to the general public. There's also folks that come in for donors. And so for a Devin Nunes, I agree. Your typical voter in Arizona probably does not know who he is, but a donor does. There's probably a segment that they were trying to tap into. So that makes sense. And that happens on the Democrat side as well. You've had folks sometimes, even high profile people sometimes that just fly in for a fundraiser and leave. They don't do anything public at all. So it always depends on what the strategy is and what their availability is as well.
Absolutely.
Yes, yeah. And finally, could we see an Adam Schiff in Arizona, or are we still too center-right for that?
No, I wouldn't be surprised at all if Chairman Schiff were to come to Arizona. In fact, I'm sure that he has in the past. He's been a member of Congress for a while. I would think, though, that on the timing piece, being the majority party and really, he's has a role in drafting those articles, I would be surprised from a political perspective if he comes before the new year.
Okay. That's Sam Richard. Also here is Lorna Romero with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap, which continues after this. It's the Friday Newscap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today, Lorna Romero, owner of Elevate Strategies, and Sam Richard, owner of the Ebenezer Group.
All right, guys, so there's a conference in town this week, the American Legislative Exchange Council, commonly known as ALEC. It brought some protesters out. It's an organization that brings in legislators from across the country. They do a lot of model legislation. Lorna, is this as big a deal as some people were making? I mean, obviously, this is a great time of year to come to Phoenix, especially if you're a D.C. or East Coast-based organization. No threat of snow, at least in the Valley. But does it say anything about Arizona, about Phoenix, the fact that a group like this came here?
No, not at all. And it's not a big deal. And I think that's been a ridiculous overreaction about the fact that there's a conference here where they have lawmakers from across the nation that talk about issues and model legislation and things that are working in their state and that's not. It happens all the time. There are a number of different organizations that do this. Some of them are right-leaning, some are left-leaning, some a little bit more moderate. It happens all the time. And you're right. I would much rather be in Phoenix, Arizona in December than in D.C. So, I mean, and this isn't the first time that they've had a winter meeting in Phoenix. They had it a few years ago as well. So I think people are extremely overreacting about this.
So I won't overreact, but I will definitely react. I think, you know, that a lot of the critiques around groups like ALEC are valid in the sense that, you know, it's a concentration of power. It's a concentration of ideas in sectors which, frankly, already have a lot of power and influence, right? We're talking about corporate leaders. We're talking about these large Fortune 500 interests that are, you know, leading the conversation. I think where it gets a little bit tricky, especially in places like Arizona, but it happens all across the places, these are model pieces of legislation that are largely unchanged from the model that ALEC puts out. And I think that some of the critique is that, you know, we want Arizona ideas from Arizonans. And when you get to these model bills, you know, like 1070 from a few years ago or any number of pieces of legislation, I think that's what voters want. They're yearning for, you know, we sent you to the legislature to represent Arizona. Why are you representing these multinational corporations? And I think that people gather and have these conversations all the time in a variety of spaces that are funded by a variety of different sources. But I think this one in particular just has a little bit of that tinge of being already focused industry.
You know, what I find most intriguing about this entire conversation is there is another organization called the National Council of State Legislators, I believe, where a number of lawmakers, a lot of Democrats go as well. They do similar work. They talk about a variety of issues. They meet with their colleagues from other states, and they talk about model legislation as well. But ALEC, for some reason, gets attacked, which I don't understand. And I also don't understand, don't we want to learn about best practices and things that are happening elsewhere? I mean, we do that in our companies. We do that as individuals. On the federal level, they learn from other countries what's working, what's not. And so what's wrong with people gathering and talking about ideas and brainstorming?
Well, what is the balance between best practices, learning what has worked and what hasn't worked in another state, and maybe just copying and pasting a bill or a proposal from a national organization into a state? Like, what's the balance there?
Well, and obviously, and I think copying and pasting is a little aggressive. I mean, everyone has different statutes. Every state has different statutes. Every state has a different state constitution. So some things work in certain states, some things don't. And so, I mean, if you're taking a general concept, if you're talking about a tax reform issue or a tort reform issue, that's usually the kind of wonky stuff that's being discussed at these conferences. And you're trying to figure out, how could we do something similar in our state? And it's just a starting point. It's a conversation starter. And usually these folks come back, meet with local stakeholders. That's where the representative process starts. And they sit down in a room and they discuss it even more. And so this concept that just because you hear about an idea that worked in another state and you're trying to figure out how to make it work in your home state is all of a sudden you being, a pawn for corporate leaders and et cetera, blah, blah, blah. I think it's ridiculous. And it's just overanalyzing and attacking something that's really not that big of a deal.
Now, Sam, one thing we do have to ask, though. Are ALEC and NCSL the same thing?
They are not the same thing. No. but I think that that being said, though, I think the foundational piece of why gatherings like this are needed in some cases, although I would say that ALEC has a different role, is that the people who put their names forth and enter into state legislatures across the country are citizens first and foremost, right? We have public educators, we have cattle ranchers, we have real estate agents that are members of the Arizona State Legislature. So you don't go in understanding, you know, the three or four dozen titles of the Arizona revised statutes, right? So I think that gatherings like this are needed to learn from best practices of other lawmakers across the country. My position is I just feel like learning from other lawmakers across the country is better than learning from, you know, a concentrated set of these, you know, large corporations that definitely have a targeted agenda.
Well, and if I could just add, other organizations outside of ALEC have corporate sponsors. I mean, people sponsor these conferences all the time. And so if we're going to say that ALEC is, you know, a shill for corporate America, I think you have to make the same argument for all of these other conferences, even those that are more left-leaning. And I don't disagree that, you know, we need to have, you know, having conversations just with people who are in the industry or lawmakers, et cetera. But I don't see what's wrong with getting people together, having conversations about issues, and you're making it seem like they only attend the ALEC conference. They go to a number of different conferences. I mean, you have folks that go to bipartisan conferences all the time and debate issues. And so, but it's just ALEC, for some reason, has become a boogeyman. And now with the 1070 stuff being thrown into it this week, it's just like everything that you can throw at it, people do. And it's really a harmless conference in actuality.
Sam, final thoughts, harmless?
I would say that it is not harmless, but I do agree that some of the rhetoric might be a touch too far. But at the end of the day, there are plenty of opportunities. ALEC is one of many, but it is an outlier in some respects.
Okay, our last few minutes, let's go to County Assessor Paul Peterson. There was an investigation. We had the Capital Times reporter Dylan Rosenblatt first hour chatting about the results of that. And Sam, one thing that really stood out is this idea that he didn't necessarily neglect his duties, indicating that maybe shouldn't be a full-time elected position, possibly. What are your thoughts generally on that?
Yeah, I think that there are a lot of county-level elected positions that you know, one of the consequences of County Assessor Peterson's dilemma currently might be a broad conversation around which offices are elected and which offices are appointed. Because I think that question, especially in a place where, you know, a lot of corporations and places value work-life balance, you know, are we measuring, you know, the gate up and down at a parking garage or how many times you logged into your, you know, desktop computer as working, right? So I mean, that being a set... Setting aside all of the reasons why this issue is in front of us, I think that that conversation around what offices are elected and which are appointed might be a positive outcome of this situation.
Well, Lorna, one thing I'd like to have is we should start saying life-work balance as opposed to work-life balance.
Oh, I agree. I'm right there with you. I vote for that. And I completely agree with Sam. I think that's this whole investigation and that conclusion that this didn't what he was doing didn't prevent him from doing his duties as assessor. It raises a question of, well, then what really are the duties and what's the time commitment and right. Should it be appointed? Should it be elected? Can you combine this role with something else? Right. I mean, it raises a lot of questions. And so yeah, I completely agree with Sam.
And the underpinning legal strategy here, I think, is an important one just to acknowledge in that as the trial or the proceedings move forward, really his position as an elected official is one of his only bargaining chips, right? Like, you know, maybe don't pursue those charges and I'll step down, right? Well, so if this office was taken from him, there would be no bargaining chip. So some of the overtures from his legal team to really fight for this office are really foundational in that fight.
It's also kind of interesting the term neglect of duty isn't really defined in statute. Like, I guess it's up to whichever governmental body is debating the issue at the time to figure out what constitutes neglect. Is that that seems like something maybe somebody should look into.
Yeah, you raise a good point. I mean, because I guess it could be any elected official at any level and there's an investigation. Did they neglect their duty? And how do you gauge that? How do you yeah. assess that? I don't really know. So, but no, it's a good point. And I think we were all pretty shocked when that came back saying that there was no neglect of duty.
Right.
Saying, okay, well, that's an interesting job and role to have, right. And you don't really need to do much
Maybe
work.
They can talk about a further definition of that turn of phrase at ALEC.
No, Sam.
Wow.
Just teasing.
Sam Richard with the final word. He is the owner of the Ebenezer Group, and Lorna Romero is owner of Elevate Strategies. Guys, thanks as always.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.